ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। आई वेलकम ऑल द डिवोटीज, गेस्ट्स, विजिटर्स हु हैव कम टू अवर टेंपल टुडे, दिस इवनिंग। डेली इवनिंग वी हैव ए क्लास ऑन भगवद गीता, सो वी हैव रीच्ड सिक्स चैप्टर टुडे, टेक्स्ट नंबर 43। सो दिस इज द टेक्स्ट। I am supposed to cover three texts today, 43, 44 and 45. So we'll chant this verse now. I'll chant it first and then you can repeat after me. Tatra tam buddhi sanyogam labhate paurvadehikam yatate chatato bhuya samsiddhau kurunandana. And he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Since I am supposed to cover text number 44 and 45 also, we will go through the translation of those verses also. So text number 44, translation: by virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. Text number 45, translation: and when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So these three are the verse translations. I'll go through the purport, which is the explanation for this verse. Purport is by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Purport says, King Bharat, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahman, is an example of good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharat was the emperor of the world, and since his time, this planet has been known among the demigods as Bharat Varsha. Formerly, it was known as Ilavrit Varsha. The emperor, at an early age, retired for spiritual perfection, but failed to achieve success. In his next life, he took birth in the family of a good Brahman and was known as Jad Bharat, because he always remained secluded and did not talk to anyone. And later on, he was discovered as the greatest transcendentalist by King Rahugan. From his life, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. So we'll stop here because the purpose of text number 44 and 45 are long. We'll not be able to cover them. But in the course of this discussion, we'll cover the points that are mentioned in these verses. So we have these three verses today. And just before these three verses that we are discussing today, in text number 41 and 42, because it's important to understand, we'll better understand today's verses if we just go through the translation quickly. Text number 41 says, the unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. So we can understand here the discussion is about the unsuccessful yogi, a person who's trying for perfection but not successful. His journey stops in between. Text number 42 speaks, or if such a yogi is unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. So this is the background to the verses that we are discussing today. We can understand the discussion in these verses or in this section is certainly not about an ordinary man, not about an ordinary person. This person is a yogi who has tried to achieve success in yoga, But due to some reasons, which may be different, for somebody it may be his own conditionings that come up. For some people it may be outside circumstances. But due to whatever reason, such a person unfortunately could not complete the process. And then he has died before achieving success. So then Krishna, Lord Krishna, is discussing the fate of such a person. And in today's 3 verses, he says that on taking such a birth again, he revives his consciousness again. So in text number 43, which we have here, and the next text, that is text number 44, Prabhupada uses the word, on taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness. So it's important to understand why Prabhupada uses this word divine. He can just say, you know, this yogi, he was unsuccessful, and now when he has taken his birth again, he starts off his activities. But Prabhupada persistently in 2 verses, consecutive verses translation, is using the word divine consciousness. So I was trying to understand why Prabhupada mentions this divine consciousness. Because this person here, he is on a journey. He is at a certain point and is trying to achieve perfection in his life. And his journey has been stopped, or you could say interrupted due to some reasons. But how is this journey? This journey is not an ordinary journey. When we talk of a journey, we could think of traveling from one place to another place. Here, this person could very well be in the same place, but he's rising in terms of his consciousness. And where is his consciousness directed towards? His consciousness is directed towards trying to realize the Lord in his heart, the Paramatma. So because his consciousness, or because his endeavors, because his journey that we are talking of here is connected to the Lord, divinity, that's why Prabhupada uses the word, he tries to revive, he revives his divine consciousness. And then I was going through one Acharya's commentary, Baldev Vidya Bhushan's commentary, and there actually he mentions this. Then I found it out. He mentions that this buddhi sanyogam, this word that is mentioned, it points to the direction given by Paramatma. Because this person in this chapter, Dhyan Yoga, is a Dhyan Yogi. He is trying to realize the Paramatma in his heart. So then Baldev Vidya Bhushan points it out, that buddhi sanyogam means that Paramatma is helping him. And because Paramatma is helping you, the Lord is helping you, certainly the activity has to be divine. He would not help you in anything that is undivine. So that's why Prabhupada mentions this divine consciousness. The last 2 lines of this purport here, Prabhupada makes a very nice point. He says, transcendental endeavors never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. So this is also something that is very important to understand. Many of us are practicing devotees. Very few of us can claim here that we have already achieved perfection. Most of us are facing struggles, obstacles in our own lives. So when we hear of a statement like this, that any endeavor on this path never goes in vain, and the Lord is so merciful that he again gives us repeated opportunities, this statement when we hear gives us a lot of hope. This statement makes strugglers or people who are endeavoring for perfection very happy. If the Lord would have been a person who says, I give you only one chance, so you decide what to do, then we would have had a lot of reasons to complain. But no, Lord is not like that. Lord is very merciful. He's saying, he gives you many chances again and again. If you can't do this, do this. If this is not possible, do that. In fact, if you see the law of karma, that is an integral part of Vedic philosophy. What is the law of karma? If you do certain activities, you get a corresponding result. So let's say there is a person and he does some good activities. He does some activities that will benefit others. So what is the result that he gets? He gets something that will benefit himself. He'll also be helped by the Lord in certain ways. If a person does something wrong to somebody, something that will be hurting somebody else, he also gets a similar result. But the point to understand is, what is the difference between this philosophy and some other philosophies that are prevalent today in the world is, you do something good, you get a good result, but even that good result is temporary. You again come back to your original state. It is described that if you perform lot of good activities, as is called karma, then you get enjoyment in the form of prolonged, enjoyable life in the heavenly planets, Swarga Lok. If you commit some sinful activities, you go to the hellish planets, where you suffer punishment, which is in accordance with the activities that you have done, both enjoyment as well as punishment. But after suffering punishment or enjoying the results of your good activities, what happens to you? It's not permanent. The enjoyment is not permanent, and neither is the punishment permanent. In some faiths today in the world, which are having a lot of followers, the conception of a chance given to the living entity again does not exist. You are just given one chance in this faith. According to their philosophy, you are just given one chance. So you have one life and you have one chance to perfect your life. If you perfect your life, if you do activities that are recommended by them, they have a very strict definition of these activities. If you fall in that category, if you are counted as one of their people, then there is eternal life in heaven. There is eternal life of enjoyment. However, what happens if you are not on their side? Now this not being on their side may not be even deliberate. Like, I know there is such and such group of people and I don't subscribe to their views. So this is deliberation. I have purposefully decided not to be with a particular group. But sometimes I may not even know of such a philosophy. I may not even know of such a group of people who say that if you are not with us, then your destination is not good. Even such people, according to this philosophy, are doomed to eternal hell. So either it is eternal heaven or it is eternal hell. There are only two choices for you. There's no second chance that is given to you. But according to the Vedic philosophy, this is not the mood of the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord is not a cruel monster who would hurt his own children just because they don't agree with him. And neither is he a kind of a, you know, indulger for his children, that if you are on my side, if you are agreeing with whatever I say, then here it is, eternal enjoyment for you. No, Supreme Lord is not like that. It is mentioned in the Vedic literature that the Supreme Lord is impartial by nature. He does not side on anyone's side. If a living entity decides to disobey him, he gets corresponding results. Yet, the chance to rectify himself is always present in the form of free will. So the Supreme Lord is always giving chances to living entities. Even if you don't have the right mentality, you suffer, but then by the course of suffering, you understand, I think there's something wrong. If right now I have a stomach pain, I'll understand that I have eaten something wrong in the afternoon. That's why I have this pain. If I get a headache now, I must understand that something has gone wrong with the way I passed today's day, and that's why I have a stomachache. So pain or suffering is an indication of something going wrong at a more basic level. So going by this principle, if somebody who is a subscriber to the Vedic philosophy, when he undergoes pain in his life, he does not take it as a kind of a punishment of the Lord. Instead, he takes it as a sign, as an indication from the Lord that there is something wrong that I am doing. There is something wrong in the inherent way in which I act, in the way which I think. He takes it as an opportunity to rectify himself. If I have a pain now, instead of complaining and I saying, oh, it's so painful for me, I'm in such a pitiable condition, I'll go and take some medicine and rectify the situation. So similarly, if you have proper knowledge, if you have the correct understanding, then even punishment, even reversals in your life will act to make you understand that there is something inherently wrong in the way you are leading your life. What to speak of enjoyment? If you are enjoying nicely, you will also understand that, you know, there must be something which I did, which this other person did not do. You see that you are the one who is enjoying and there is another person who is not enjoying. Somebody is born in a rich family and somebody is born in a poor family. So if the rich person is a little bit intelligent and he understands even a little bit, you know, tidbits of this philosophy, he'll understand, I'm born in a particular family like before taking birth, you have not done any activities. If it is that you have done some activities and that gives you a certain birth, you will understand. I am born in such a family, and my friend here, he is born in such family, which is not very rich, not very opulent. So there must be some background to it. It's just simple logic. It is simple common sense to understand that whether you are getting punishment or whether you are getting some rewards, there has to be some background to it. Whereas this other philosophy, which is very much prevalent in the world today, it just tells you, you just have one life. There is no background to this life. Now in this one life, you have one chance. Either you come on our side or you go to the other side. If you are on the other side, eternal hell. If you are on our side, eternal heaven. It does not make sense. But in the name of fear, in the name of enjoyment that they promise, you know, many people adhere to this philosophy. But then if these books, if this cogent, logical, sensible philosophy is given to people, I am sure there will be change in the consciousness. They will understand that this philosophy is more logical. If you plant a mango seed, you will get a mango tree. If you plant an ordinary seed, you will get an ordinary tree. How is it that a tree will come on its own without any seed that was planted before? It does not make sense. But anyways, that's how it is. So today's statement, it gives a lot of hope for us. Even another integral part of Vedic philosophy, that is reincarnation. You get another birth. Why do you get another birth? You get another chance. In today's verses, we are talking of this unsuccessful yogi who's trying to realize Lord. What if there was only one chance? What if there was only one birth that you would get to perfect your life, to connect to the Lord? What about unfortunate people like you and me who are not able to completely purify ourselves in one life? On our own strength, we don't have much hope. Yes, on the strength of the mercy of the acharyas, on the strength of the mercy of our spiritual master, we have a lot of hope. But this yogi here, it is mentioned that he tried, he endeavored, but then it was unsuccessful. So now the Lord is saying he gets another chance. It is mentioned here, if you see in this verse, it is Paurva Dehikam. Deha is the body. And Paurva comes from the word Purva. So Purva ke Deha se. Paurva Dehikam means the consciousness from his last life. So you are getting another chance. Try to do in this life. Now in text, this is text number 43. So 43 tells you that you get another chance. Now does it mean that you just get one more chance? You know, sometimes in colleges, there is a fixed number of attempts. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki. I am from an engineering background. So if somebody is in first year of engineering and he fails, he gets one more chance. So his friends are in second year and he gets a chance to again reappear for those exams. Now suppose he fails again. What is his fate? He gets a chance again. Suppose he fails again. Suppose he's too dumb. Suppose he's not intelligent. What will happen? He'll get a third chance. Now you know what? If he fails for this third time, that's it. He is deemed unfit by the education system, that this person is not fit for technical education. He gets three chances. So one thing is that you don't get any chance, and that is refuted by the Lord here today. He says, no, unsuccessful yogi gets another chance. Now talking of chances, one would say, that is it that he gets only one chance? Is it that he gets two chances? Is it that he gets three chances? Is there a limit to the chances that a living entity or an unsuccessful yogi who is being discussed today gets? No. The modern education system has. In medicine, they have some four chances. So four times if you successively fail in the same grade, in first year, second year, third year, that is it. The university says you are not fit for this kind of education. But Lord, in text number 45, which we don't have written here, I'll just read the text. Text number 45 says, Prayatnad yata manastu yogi samshuddha kilbisha anek janma samsiddhas tato yati param gatim. Translation is, and when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately, achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So one thing was, the Lord is saying, you have another chance. Now higher than that, he is giving you another information, which is, you have many chances. there is no expectation from the Lord that here is one chance for you. You have this, that's it. Do or die, now or never. No, he's not like that. Now he gives you one more chance, but this time also you fail. This time also you are not successful. He gives you another chance, another chance, another chance. This is the magnanimity of the Lord, that whoever you are, however contamination you have in your heart, he is giving you sufficient facilities again and again to purify yourself. That is magnanimity. In the Bhagavad Gita, which we are discussing today, there is a set of verses in chapter 12. And this is pertinent to our discussion today. So I'll just read the translations very fast. So this is text number 8 of chapter 12. Here Lord Krishna is advising Arjuna. He says, just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. So he is giving something practical. He does not ask the living entity to stop thinking, to stop using your intelligence. No, it's not like that. He says, just think, but fix your mind upon me. Think in connection with me. He says, engage all your intelligence in me. Don't stop using your brain. Don't become a dullard. Not that when you become a devotee, when you come to devotional service, you stop using your brain. You stop thinking. No. Now you think in the right way. Now you use your intelligence in the right way. With purified intelligence. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. Now text number 9, which is after this. Text number 9, he says, my dear Arjun, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation. So he's advising something, but then he's saying, maybe this person is incapable of doing that. In English, there is an expression, try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, they say. So I am a teacher, let's say, and I'm teaching somebody. Now, I'll teach according to my capabilities. I'll teach according to my understanding. But that may not be the best form of teaching as far as a student is concerned. Because the student may not have that background which I have. The student may not have the necessary amount of knowledge that I have when I am discussing a particular point, when I am discussing a particular section. So the best teacher is he who comes to the level of the student and teaches accordingly. Such a teacher is, you know, praised, that he does not speak from his own perspective, but he descends to the level of his student and then he teaches accordingly. There's this very nice example given by Prabhupada, that Prabhupada speaks about a preacher in the Western countries who was trying to bring people to the path of God. And he went to a place where miners would stay, who would engage in mining. So this preacher, he was speaking and he was saying, so you should all come to the path of God. This is an example in the Western world. We don't preach like that. But this is just an example to understand. So this preacher was saying, you should come to the path of God or you will go eternally to hell. So one of those miners, simple as he was, he asked, what is hell like? So that hell is a dark place, a very damp place. There's no light there, and everywhere around you there's suffering. There's not much happiness there, like that he was describing. So it went on for some while, and one of the miners said, but this is a place that is very familiar. We all go stay in the mine every day. Our mine in which we are working presently is already very dark, damp, and there's no light there, there's suffering everywhere, you can't breathe properly there. So we are already in hell. So now where is the fear that if you tell us, come to the path of God or you'll suffer eternally in hell, we are already in hell. So now no more fear. Then this preacher had to think of something to relate to these people. He could not accept. So he said, okay, hell is a place where there are no newspapers. So then this made it relevant to the miners. Because miners were used to reading newspapers. He had observed them doing that. So he said, hell is a place where there are no newspapers. So that struck them. Oh, hell is a place where there are no newspapers. I don't want to live in such a place. If you don't solve your crossword puzzles, if you don't get your daily dose of the latest news, how will you live? So that is how you make it relevant. So the teacher descends to the level of the student. He does not speak from his own platform. So the Lord here says, my dear Arjun, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So if you can't do this at least. Giving you another chance. Text number 10. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, somebody will say, mind, not possible to control. Now, regulative principles, in the kind of association that I'm living in, the kind of life that I'm leading, not possible. So he says, if you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me. Because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. So at least work for me. Do some seva sometime when you come to the temple. If you can assist in some way, you assist in that way. If you're a cook, cook in the kitchen. Do something like that. If, however, you are unable, this is the next verse, this is text number 11. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. This is at least practice some renunciation. Don't be attached to your results. So step by step, he's saying, if you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do this, do this. Text number 12. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. At least try to cultivate knowledge. At least try to read different books. Try to accumulate knowledge. Slowly you will understand that even if you study books about history, geography, let's say you are not interested in Bhagavad Gita. What is there in history? There is a history of wars between this country and that country. How so many thousands of people died. How there is always politics between kings. So an intelligent person, even if he reads history books, he will read and he will understand that there is so much temporary success, so-called success. Once upon a time, there was an Egyptian civilization. Grand pyramids stand today in front of our eyes as a sign of their opulence. Where is the rest of the civilization? You just have those monuments today. Where are the people who were so advanced, who made those monuments? We read of the Roman civilization. Julius Caesar and all those people. Where are they today? You only have their memories in the name of the months of our English calendar. July is named after Julius. August is named after Augustus. That is the only remnant that they have today. Where are the people today? Napoleon Bonaparte, he said, I am France. He was so successful. He used to win so many wars. He says, I am France. So today France is there. Where is Napoleon? He got defeated. He was killed. So many people have come and so many people have gone in history. Even if you cultivate knowledge, as Krishna says here, where will it lead to? You'll understand the success, the fame that you enjoy in this world is temporary. Let's say somebody reads geography. Geography, you will read, there was a nation once upon a time. On a particular date, that nation was divided into two nations. So you'll understand, things were very nice. But due to vested interests of some people, a good nation was divided into two. What is the state of that nation today? The states of that nation today are being divided into two. So even if you decide to actually seriously study any knowledge, and if you are intelligent, if you have some understanding, you will again come back to the same conclusion that I think I better invest my time in doing something spiritual. Why? Because spiritual means something permanent. So he says here, if you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. So once you reach the peak of knowledge and you understand, things here are temporary. Big, big presidents have been assassinated. John F. Kennedy, such a famous president. He says, ask not what the country has done for you. Ask what you have done for the country. Very famous words. He was assassinated brutally. Father of this nation, assassinated brutally. So big, big people have been killed. So then you understand life is temporary. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. So you engage yourself in meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So Krishna is so amazing. Krishna is so merciful. In text number 8, he was saying, do this, fix your mind upon me, fix your intelligence upon me. And then what is the result of that? He's saying, thus you will live in me always without a doubt. So that is the highest thing possible. Always thinking about the Lord, always being conscious of the Lord. But kind that he is, merciful that he is. In a series of 5 verses, he has given you something. What is the end of the text number 12? Translation says, for by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So in text number 8, he gave you something that would have given you the highest perfection, that is being conscious of him always. Text number 8, he understands. Not everyone will be interested in such a high level. Not everyone, for everyone will it be possible to do all these activities. So text number 8, in this small section of 5 verses, he comes down to a level that by doing this you will get peace of mind. All of us will agree that I don't have a desire to maybe always think of Krishna, always use my intelligence for Krishna, but all of us will agree, yes, I want peace of mind. Is there anybody here who says, I don't want peace of mind? So Krishna is so merciful, in these 5 verses, immediately he talks about peace of mind. So at least do this, that you will get peace of mind. And yes, if you can do more than that, do this. If you can do more than that, do this. So merciful. So he's giving more and more chances. Also, I was going through Srimad Bhagavatam text number, canto number 4 recently. And I just, remembered a verse, which is very nice. Because today we are discussing how the Lord is merciful. How the Lord is always eager to give more and more chances to the Lord. So in this verse, Dhruv Maharaj, a young devotee, 5-year-old devotee, praises the Lord in very choice words. He says, Satya shisho hi bhagavam stava pada padmam ashisha tathanu bhajata purushartha murte appeva marya bhagavan paripati dinan vashreva vatsakam anugraha katarosman. So the word that struck me here is he calls the Lord purushartha murte. Purushartha is something that is desirable by purusha or human beings. There are many goals that a purusha, a human being wants. One of them is peace of mind. Somebody would want success, fame, name, whatever. Different things that you would want. So in the translation, this is translated, purushartha murte is translated as the personification of all benedictions. So you would want the Lord to give you certain benediction. So Dhruv Maharaj in this verse praises the Lord that, my Lord, who are you? Sometimes we could say, Lord is a person who gives you benediction, who gives you some blessing. But he says, you're a personification of benediction. Dhruv Maharaj is praising the Lord by saying, you are an embodiment of benediction. You are an embodiment of blessings. What are you made of? You are made up of blessings. You understand this? He's saying, what could we get from you? What else could we get from you but benedictions, but blessings? So a person who is being described, the Lord is being described in this verse as purushartha murte, as a personification of blessings. So how kind would he be? And that is why Prabhupada says that transcendental endeavors never go in vain. Whatever you little you do, it's always in your eternal credit. And by the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. One of our devotees, his name was Jayanand Prabhu, early devotees. He was very famous for this. That anybody would come to the temple, he would always engage him in seva. He never would ask him to sit down, chant or do something like that. This was in America, of course. So maybe the situation was different. So he realized that people in America are very passionate and very eager to do something. They want to do something physical. And when they come to the temple, the best way to purify them was to engage them in some work. So it is said, sometimes he would build Rath Yatra carts. Recently we had Jagannath Puri Rath Yatra. So when they were celebrating in the US, he was the main person who would do that. He was an engineer in those times. So sometimes somebody is walking along the street and he hears a voice. He says, hello. This person is walking down the street and he looks around. Where is this voice coming from? There's nobody around. There's just this structure of a cart. So he stops, and seeing him stopping, he hears that voice again. Hello, like that. So he understands that the voice is coming from somewhere down. So he bends, he looks down and he sees a man crouched below the cart and doing some work. So, can you help me? So, a gentleman always says, yeah, all right, maybe it's some small thing, maybe this person is in difficulty down there. Can you give me that hammer that is there, lying there? So this person would say, yeah, all right, I'll give you the hammer. So once he passes on the hammer, he says, okay, can you give me that small nail that I want to hammer into this cart? So slowly it is described, he was such an expert person in engaging people in service. Sometimes it is described, ordinary passers-by on the street would end up doing seva for 3 to 4 hours. A simple people. And this Jayanand Prabhu was such a gentleman, such a simple person. Just saying a simplicity. Can you do this? Can you do that? One time somebody came to the temple and you just take ordinary visitor. He said, oh, you see this door? No, this screw has come out. Can you fix this? So he would always give some simple services. He never asked, can you chant this verse of Bhagavad Gita? No, not that. That person might, you know, could run away, possibly, thinking that, my God, coming to this temple, they asked me to do this. But simple services. Can you do this? Can you get something from there? Like that. And in this way, he engaged people in service. So he would also, learning from the Lord, give repeated chances to people to purify themselves. So devotees and the Lord, both are very expert at being merciful and giving something to a person at his level, something that he can do practically. Not something that I would want you to do. No. An expert person will give something to a person to do which he is capable of doing. Alright, so we'll move ahead. Then in the next verse, that is 44, it is explained that such a person automatically becomes attracted to yogic principles. And he is above the ordinary Shabda Brahma, it is mentioned in the verse. So that is Karma Kanda rituals. So a yogi who is unsuccessful and who is given another chance, it is mentioned that he does not get trapped in the rituals, in the different things that are mentioned in the scripture. You do this and you get that. No. Why? Because he is not an ordinary person. He was already a yogi. So he knows the principles. So now he does not fall to the karmakanda level. He is already there at the dhyan yoga level. And then Prabhupada in the purport, he gives an example of Haridas Thakur, who, although born in a non-Vedic family, in a family that did not live by Vedic principles, but yet he was accepted as a Namacharya by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So such a person, it is mentioned that he is already above, a devotee and a yogi is already above the ordinary rituals that are mentioned in the scriptures. And Prabhupada gives a very simple example. He says, if you meet some person and you ask him, what is your qualification? So he says, I am a graduate. Now you don't ask him, have you passed the 10th standard? Have you passed SSC? Have you passed HSC? No. A person who's already passed his graduation, it is to be understood that he has already passed the lower grades. So this verse that is mentioned there, there's a verse that is mentioned from Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada mentions it. It is mentioned. Aho batoshva pachato gariyan yajivagre vartate namatubhyam te pustapaste juhuvu sasnurarya brahma nuchur nama grinanti yete. O my Lord, persons who chant the holy names of your lordship are far, far advanced in spiritual life. Even if born in families of dog eaters are the lowest class. Such chanters have undoubtedly performed all kinds of austerities, all kinds of sacrifices, bathed in all sacred places, and finished all scriptural studies. So he is trying to explain this verse where it is mentioned that any person who is firmly engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Such a person, somebody would think that maybe it's just a random coincidence that this person is chanting. No. According to this verse, it is mentioned that such a person has already performed all austerities. He has already undergone all purification and like that. And that is why he mentions that although Haridas Thakur is apparently born in a non-Vedic family, in a family which does not live by the highest principles, still, the Lord himself considered him to be Namacharya. Why? Because he was firm in his vow to chant the holy names. There are several examples in his life where he was tempted, but he did not fall prey. He continued chanting. And there Prabhupada mentions this, that a person who's passed his graduation, you never doubt whether he has passed the lower grades. So in the course of this discussion, somebody would think, this question could come. I see devotees who are engaged in chanting the holy names, but honestly speaking, they don't appear to have actually undergone all the purificatory processes, to have undergone all austerities, all sacrifices, bathed in all holy places. It does not appear to be like that. So what does it mean when Mother Devahuti, in this verse that we discussed, it is a glorification of the Lord by Mother Devahuti. So on what basis does Mother Devahuti say? So we'll try to understand that. It is mentioned that a person who has some pious inclinations, like there is a verse in 10th canto which describes the friends of Lord Krishna. It is mentioned, Krita Punya Punja. I don't remember the exact verse, but it is mentioned that the friends of Lord Krishna must have accumulated heaps of pious credits for having a birth and having the friendship of Lord Krishna himself, who is not even approachable by the demigods. When the demigods want to approach the Lord, they just go to the shore of the milk ocean. And from there they pray. If you read the 10th canto, Krishna book, in the start it is mentioned how the earth was troubled by many kings who had a lot of military power and they were oppressing people. And so Bhumi Devi in the form of a cow approached the demigods and demigods approached Brahmaji and they all went to the Supreme Lord. But the Supreme Lord is far away in the milk ocean on a serpent bed. He is not approachable. So what do? They stand on the shore of the ocean. We have a beach here. So something like that. You have a milk ocean and demigods, they can't go near the Lord. They have to stand there and from there they have to submit their appeal. And then the Lord revealed in Brahmaji's heart that don't worry, I'm going to come as Krishna now. So here you have the Lord who's not even approachable by demigods. They have to stand far away. And his friends were born in the same village. They got the chance to associate with the Supreme Lord. So Krita Punya Punja. So this question could come again there also. That we hear that devotional service is ahetuki. Devotional service is not based on doing some pious activities or something. So in what sense is this Krita Punya Punja mentioned? And here also we see that Devahuti, Mother Devahuti, she mentions that a person has already performed all pious activities, already performed all sacrifices, austerities and like that. So the understanding is that if a person has little bit piety in him, that is not a sufficient condition to get the grace of the Lord. But if you have a little bit piety in you, you attract the mercy of the pure devotee. Let's say you have some good quality and you are not inclined for devotional service. But sometimes, let's say you have a tendency to offer obeisances because you are a little bit humble. Whenever you see an elderly person, you have some culture in you. And whenever some elderly person comes to your family, he may not be a devotee, unconnected to devotional service. But you just know that whenever an elder comes, I have to offer obeisances. I should not talk rude with elderly people, even if these basic remnants of culture are there. So one day you come to the temple, and some senior sannyasi is there, some big acharya has come to the temple. So immediately you know, elderly people means offer obeisances. Elderly people means if you have some doubts, ask them, they will help you. They are wise, they are experienced. So, the same principle you apply for devotees. But the difference is that when somebody is not connected to devotional service, he can give you some mundane advice. He can give you some mundane wisdom. He can help you in some mundane way. But because this person now is a devotee and he's a senior devotee, so he has got a lot of spiritual wisdom. So, when he sees some good qualities in you, he awards you spiritual advice. He gives you something that is capable of helping you in a spiritual way. So his blessings are not ordinary blessings. His blessings will always be connected to the Lord. So he'll say, may you advance in Krishna consciousness. May you get more love for reading the scriptures. May you develop love for chanting the holy name, something like that. So that little piety that you have is not a sufficient condition to get the grace of the Lord. But that piety that you have attracts the mercy of the pure devotee. Of course, it is described that a pure devotee also is impartial. But if you see somebody who is already very favorable to you, certainly you would be inclined to give him more mercy. His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj, one time he had come to this temple and he was explaining this concept. So he was saying, yes, anybody who wants to develop his muscles, he's welcome to the gym. You go to a gymnasium, you join it, and you can do all those exercises and become strong, develop your muscles like that. However, if you already have a little bit strength, if you already have a little bit of muscles, you are not a very lean and thin person, when you go to the gymnasium, you are better equipped. You can start off at an advanced level. And because you have that inherent capability in you, your progress in that gymnasium will be very fast. And because you are fast already, the instructor in that gymnasium will also be very much inclined towards teaching you more and more. Whereas a lean and thin person, probably it will take one and a half months just to get started off, you know, just to develop his stamina, just to get used to standing for 1 hour, to do something for 1 hour, because he's not used to that. So, yes, everyone and anyone is welcome to the gymnasium to develop his muscles, to become strong on a bodily level. But if a person is already strong, even to a little degree, his progress in the gymnasium will be very fast. So similarly, each and everyone, whoever you are, is certainly welcome to devotional service. But a person who has some piety in him is already one notch above ordinary people. And such a person attracts the mercy of the Lord. The same person, Jayanand Prabhu, in those days he was a mechanical engineer from Ohio State University. So most of Prabhupada's followers, they were not very educated, ordinary people. But this person was a very educated person. But it is mentioned that Jayanand Prabhu, in those days he could have got an excellent job. 60s, if you are an engineer in US, you were certainly well placed. But he had a spiritual longing in his heart. You know what was his profession before he met Prabhupada? He was a taxi driver. He used to drive taxis. Why? Because he knew that if I get into a normal kind of a job, then you know all those office politics and you get caught up in that ordinary way of life. He had seen his mother and father leading that kind of life. So he had already rejected that. So just imagine in 60s, somebody is a mechanical engineer and he's driving a taxi. Why? Because he'll earn a little, lead a simple life. But throughout this, he mentions, he would read newspapers. What for? Not for those news. Newspapers would contain a column of some, because that was a time when many Indian people were going to the West, gurus, trying to make an impact there. So he would read about different programs that would be held in the US at that time. And it was during one such reading of the newspaper that he found that there is one person called A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. He's holding a program and he went to that program and then he got connected. So a person like Jayanand Prabhu, who was already on a spiritual search, and there are many other disciples of Prabhupada also, who were already on a spiritual search. Such people, they advanced very fast. Now, is it to say that Prabhupada did not give his mercy to other people who were not already on a spiritual search? No. All of them are very highly respectable. But the speed with which certain disciples took it up was different. So, something like that. So, that's how we can understand that if you are purified, then you have a better chance. And as Mother Devahuti says, you have already a person who is firmly fixed up in chanting the holy names. One should be having a clear understanding that this person has already performed all austerities, this person has already performed all sacrifices and like that. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna himself, he says, Yesham tu antagatam papam, jananam punya karmanam. He says, Yesham tu antagatam papam. A person who has already finished his sinful life, such a person advances, such a person becomes a devotee. There are more points and, I would love to cover them, but then it's already 8:30. So I'll open at this time the discussion to, if somebody has any questions, we can take some questions. Today's class was scheduled to be given by another devotee, Ram Prabhu. But my friend Gokulanam Prabhu, he just caught hold of me and said, Prabhu, give this class today. So I'm sorry if there are any shortcomings in the class. Going by the fact that there are no questions, I can understand. And the explanation was not very clear. So there's no doubts, obviously. Alright, so if there are no questions, we'll stop here. Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय।